You're listening to the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's a Burger Tuesday over at Rockin' Brews, best burger special going in town. Of course, every Monday through Friday, they got their 10 items for 10 bucks or less at lunchtime. They're over there in the Prairie Fire, southwest corner of 135th and Knoll in the Prairie Fire development. Lunchtime, 10 menu items, only 10 bucks. The star of the show, though, is Burger Tuesday, where all day long, burgers are only $5. You heard me right, $5 for a Burger Tuesday with the purchase of a drink. And again, it's not another buck for cheese and another buck for bacon and another buck for the fried egg, like on the gastro pub that comes with all that. It's not $2 more for fries or sweet potato fries or their incredible onion rings. It is all, everything you see right there on the menu that comes with that burger. You get it for $5. It's the best burger deal in town every Tuesday, all day Tuesday at Rockin' Brews. At 135th and all in the Prairie Fire, it is the best burger deal in town and a huge favorite of my family. Don't forget, kids, half price, 11A to 6P as well. Take advantage of that. You heard the music. We are going to California. Orange County Register feature writer Ryan Karchi joins us here in the program. Ryan, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
I appreciate the time. I want to get to the three-on-three that got debuted last night with the big three, Ice Cube's, I don't know, I guess pro league you'd call it there, as well as the three-on-three that's coming to the Olympics. You wrote a nice piece on that. But let's start with the Ball family. You no doubt, being part of the UCLA beat, have covered this family, and they, of course, make news again last night. LeVar is there with Lonzo and LaMelo. And they're being at Monday Night Raw. He's in the ring taking his shirt off. I believe the man to be a complete clown. I get creating press and pub and all that. Is there more genius there to this madness than I realize? Or is this a family that is headed towards a Marinovich family-like implosion at some point?
I will say that with LeVar, being on a WWE show was just the perfect environment for him. It seemed to really bring out the character, like the extremes of the character that we've already gotten to know. But you know, answering your other question, I don't think that he is exactly harmful to his family at this point. I think Lonzo so far has gotten along pretty well with him, and you know, at this point, he's been right all along. So I do have some issues criticizing him too much. But that said, you know, he obviously his methods are a little controversial in terms of trying to advertise his son. And I think you're right. In a lot of ways, he has looked like a clown at some points. But, you know, in terms of affecting his son's career, I don't think it's gone that far yet. And I think now that he's with the Lakers, that's a system that, you know, LeVar's not really going to be a distraction. So we'll see. You know, we're definitely going to be monitoring things here in L.A. But at this point, I think he's more just home.
Oh, Ryan, so much you said there that we got to back up to. First of all, you said he hasn't affected his career, right? Positively or negatively. I mean, yeah, I agree. He has not tanked his career. He was drafted number two overall, which is where he was slotted to go. And so he has not cost him any money. But he hadn't gotten to a training camp yet. And the Lakers are actually a good team for him to go to because there isn't like, you know, some they're in a John Wall to be like, yeah, you know, I know you're your dad's punk and where's your daddy today? But there's going to be somebody. I mean, whether it's Jordan Clarkson might even have he doesn't have a ton of cachet, but he's a good player and he's going to have a bigger bank account, which we know, you I'm sure know as well, the size of your bank account is a lot of, you know, how big you are in the locker room. Like, it's how well you can ball, and we'll see if Lonzo Ball can be a definitively better player than a guy like, and I'm not trying to say Clarkson's the guy, I'm just picking him out as a guy who has some amount of success at the NBA level, was all rookie team, I believe, or if he wasn't all rookie, he was second team, and has some success, and because he was an undrafted guy, he's already gotten paid a substantial amount by the Lakers. That there's some swag there, with the kind of check you bring, and unless Lonzo Ball comes in and just, you know, dominates as a player, if there's any kind of learning curve, there's going to be some guys that really have them under his thumb, and that's where it's going to be a huge mental check for him. See, I see this in like 2 years, him and his dad don't speak to each other anymore. Because you think, you said he's not going to be a distraction for the Lakers. Are you kidding me? You think he's going away? You know the need to fill programming on ESPN2 and Fox Sports 1. They're going to keep having him on. I mean, he's not going to disappear now.
I agree. I do think, and I think you bring up a good point. It's that media is really, you know, what's fanning the flames of the fire here.
Oh, yeah.
I do think with time that changes. I mean, LeVar's act has already kind of gone through a cycle in the media. I think we're coming out at a point where with the Lakers, if they handle it correctly, and maybe they won't, it's quite possible that, you know, they let something LeVar says get to them. It could happen. But if they handle it well, I think ultimately, you know, his voice will fade from you know, the foreground a little bit. Not to say we won't hear from him. I know ESPN Radio in town have him on, you know, as much as they can. But, you know, I just don't know that, you know, there are going to be national stories that come out of these comments, you know, once a week, like some people seem to be expecting.
All right, let me ask you this. What is the – I mean, you're closer, and maybe you can just say, hey, I don't really know. Feel free. That's a legitimate answer to this question I'm about to ask you. I'm not going to say appalled, but I was very uncomfortable hearing LaMelo Ball say, beat that N's ass. I mean, here it is last night.
Beat that ass!
And he repeats that twice. For a 15-year-old kid to be sitting on national TV and to say that means that ain't the first time the kid said it. And it's not the first time. He's clearly heard it a lot around the family dynamic. Now, however you talk around your family, you know, I know some people that they're cussing in front of their 6 or 7-year-old kid. That's not my thing. But they're going to hear it at some point. What's the right age? Hey, far be it from me to tell you what's the right age for your kids to hear profanity. By the way, I'm not a prude. I'm a big fan of profanity, as the guys who work with me can tell you. In our office place, our little locker room, hey, nobody tops me when it comes to that, right? But there's a time and a place, and I don't think that's the place. And I'm not even going to get into the whole social dynamic of who can and can't say the N-word, all right? But a 15-year-old kid on national TV saying that, I get it that ESPN is being completely cowardly and not taking on that topic today. At least I haven't seen them do it yet. But UCLA's got to cringe, don't they? You're around that program. I mean, don't they have to just absolutely... Steve Alford's got to be like, oh, God, that's not a good look, right? I mean, is it going to kill him with other recruits? No. In fact, it might even earn them credit with other recruits. But that, for your boosters and donors, the old fart white guy booster has got to be cringing at that, isn't he?
I mean, I think the important part in what you brought up is the fact that this is a 15-year-old kid. We have a tendency to forget that, you know, these guys are still very young, LaMelo especially. And he is a cocky kid. I mean, you don't take, you know, point out shots at the half-court line and take them without being a little cocky. But, you know, that said, I think, you know, if you asked him right now, he'd probably say he regretted it. Maybe he wouldn't. I don't know. But I can't comment too much about, you know, what the – you know, the family values that are kind of implicit with that, because I don't know enough about, you know, how their family structure works.
Sure.
I do know that LaMelo, for all intents and purposes, has seemed like a very nice kid every time I've talked to him. So we'll see how he develops before he gets to UCLA. So there's still a lot of time. He may not even end up at UCLA. You never know. So a lot can change here in the next few years.
Yeah, they can. And how much is UCLA, and we'll shift gears to the 3-on-3 after this, but you're around that program, so I'm curious, how much are they cringing at the fact that they got to, frankly, live through the middle kid, who I can't even remember his name because he's not going to –
LeAngelo.
LeAngelo, who is mm-hmm. – I mean, and I have nothing against the kid, and I'm not rooting against him, but by all accounts, is not going to pee a drop when it comes to the league, and is – I've been told by some people he's a MAC-level recruit, and he is – you know, he – got to sign with UCLA because Lonzo absolutely can ball, and they're pretty sure, and the recruiting keeps, you know, as he's grown, LaMelo's going to be a player. LeVar's going to be around. Like, it's one thing to live with LeVar when you got the number two pick in the draft, driving the bus. Now when you have a MAC-level player, look, I remember just watching KU play with Xavier Henry and, God, I can't remember who the second brother was, C.J. Henry. And, mm-hmm. you know, the dad was chirping. He was kind of pre-LeVar Ball. He wasn't to this extreme. And he wasn't in L.A., and he didn't have the market that he could get to. But he was quoted all the time about how great both kids were. And Bill Self in Kansas tolerated him for Xavier Henry's one-and-done year, and he had a very good freshman year, and then went to the league. And then, wow, amazingly, C.J. Was going to go pursue opportunities elsewhere. He was quickly shown the door. You can't show the door to the middle kid if LeVar Ball is a big pain in the ass because you're sold your soul to get the third kid. I mean, they got to be cringing about that time right now, aren't they?
Now, see, I think there is a misconception a little bit about LeVar. When Lonzo was at UCLA, the only instance that I had found out or had heard about in which he kind of meddled, I guess would be the word, was when Lonzo tried to change his funky shot during a preseason trip to Australia. But other than that, LeVar, at least according to Steve Alford, now he could be not telling the truth about this, who knows, but according to Steve Alford, LeVar never really meddled other than that. So, whether he steps in when Jello gets there and is not the player that Lonzo is, which you're right, he's definitely not. But that said, I do think he'll be a contributor. I mean, he's still a good shooter. I watched quite a few games of his last year as a senior at Chino Hills High School. And, he has some game. Now, you're right. He's definitely not Lonzo or LaMelo. But I do think he could be a four-year player, and, maybe he develops even more than we're expecting him to. But,
okay.
At this point, I think, Jello just happens to be one of the quietest of the three brothers, actually. So I don't know that we're going to hear much out of UCLA, especially when all the attention is going to be on Lonzo's rookie year with the Lakers. Now, that's the spot where we may see LeVar's face every now and again.
Yeah, no, I agree. And like you said, he's a big star there in L.A. and all the and we in the media, and I'll wear it for all of us media, all of our brethren. It is, but I'll still persecute the biggest offenders. It's the pukes on the TV that keep putting him on TV that are driving that machine. He can't go away if they keep throwing him out in front of the public. And frankly, the general public has to accept the responsibility because they're getting some kind of ratings when the guy comes on or they wouldn't keep doing it. So,
it's definitely a media problem much bigger than just LeVar Ball.
Yeah, we'll see when the gore of the car crash starts to become offensive and people start to look away, because that's what he is, in my opinion, is a car crash. All right, let's switch gears. We're talking to Ryan Karche from the Orange County Register. Penned a piece about the Ball family a little while ago, and it has covered them, but also a nice piece about the three-on-three phenomenon that was hatched last night on Fox Sports 1 and is coming to an Olympics near you very soon. First of all, what was your reaction to what you saw out of the big three, Ice Cube's Pro League last night? Did you like it? Were you impressed? Were you entertained? Do you think it's got legs?
I'm still undecided. I think there's something there, and I don't think this league is necessarily there yet. I don't think it's reached what it could be. But that said, I mean, there were times when you watched the play of these, former NBA retired players, and you're reminded why they're retired. Allen Iverson, I think, played 6 minutes, and I think I want to say he hit one shot. He did not look like the Allen Iverson of old. So I know there was a lot of talk from Ice Cube and his team saying, these guys can shoot the ball, that sort of thing. But the jury's still out on that. So that said, the nostalgia factor of it, seeing guys who, we haven't seen in a few years who were fan favorites, that was still cool. But I don't know if it has enough juice to last through an entire summer. But we'll see.
There is no fast break.
No.
I mean,
although that doesn't mean that it's not fast, which is one of the things I didn't realize about 3-on-3 basketball. And you know, it's a little different at the Olympic level, I think, because you're getting guys who aren't, you know, 41, 42 years old. But it's the 3-on-3 game can be really quick. I mean, in the Olympics, it'll be a 12-second shot clock. In the Big Three, it was 14 seconds, so it's a little slower. But it's exciting when it's executed well. Just I'm not sure that the Big Three is the best example of that.
And how much of what I watched last night, rule-wise, where are the differences? I know, like, last night we had twos, threes, and a four-point shot. And in the Olympics, inside the arc is one and outside the arc is two, right?
Yep, no four-point shot or 3 points, for that matter, in the Olympics. Like I said, the 12-second shot clock instead of 14. And then I know in the Big Three, the idea was to take your fouls from the place where you, or your foul shots from the place where you were fouled. That's not the case in the Olympics. So also, the Olympics only go up to 21, and it's a 10-minute clock. So whichever happens first, the clock running out or a team getting to 21, that's how it ends. So it's actually quicker, which I think that was one of the problems with the Big Three that you noticed right away, was the games were kind of dragging. The 3-on-3 is supposed to be quick and supposed to be able to cycle through a lot of games, and wasn't exactly, you know, the seamless, quick sort of showing that I'd at least seen in the FIBA 3-on-3 games that I'd watched.
And is that, like, in the FIBA, do they have multiple games? Do they, like, basically play a whole tournament right there in one night? Is that the concept, or at least a best of three, or at least three different teams playing around? Like, how do they, you know, because I was watching the arena, for the first night, the arena's full. Well, the house was packed for the XFL the first night, right? And that,
sure.
That turned lasted a year. So we'll see. The proof is in game 7-8. What is the plan for how many games are played and what you actually get if you buy a ticket or sit down to watch it?
So when FIBA just recently held their World Cup in Western France, the quarterfinals and semifinals games were all played in one day. They had round robin where pretty much every team played. I don't remember exactly how many teams were involved. It was something like 16 or something, or somewhere around there. It might have been 20, actually. But so that many teams can play. I mean, like I said, it's only 10 minutes. So the clock does stop for fouls, but you're talking about a 20-minute game total.
Right.
So they easily cycled in another team, and a new game was playing 5 minutes after that game had ended. So if it were to come to America and be a little bit, you know, more mainstreamed, maybe that changes a little bit, just because, you know, we love sideline interviews and, you know, post-game press conferences and that sort of thing, so things slow down. But it is it's capable of being very quick and cycling through a lot of games, and that's why a lot of people, you know, around the globe like it, because you can – you know, get a lot done in a little bit of time.
Yeah, and that is one of the things that we haven't figured out with our 4-plus-hour baseball games and our 3-hour and 40-minute NFL games. And that's one of the reasons why those games aren't catching on globally. And I know, look, in Europe, you're getting there's traction with the NFL. A lot of people don't realize about the NFL games is a lot of those, they come in because they're played at night. They come in and they're chopped. It's like what you see on DirecTV when you get the football package and you see a game in like 30 minutes. That's the kind of thing that they chop those things up and are showing an NFL game in an hour. Now, maybe their appetite will grow and that'll be there, but the international model is quicker is better. The soccer, 2 hours in the door is what people like. And so, you know, internationally, if the game is going to grow, that's where it needs to be. And the U.S. does tend to like to slow things down, create a lot of commercial breaks, which if you watch soccer, you know, there's none of those. You got to get your sponsorships in elsewhere. It is an interesting dynamic to see how that's going to unfold. One of the things about the rules, you mentioned 1 point inside the arc, 2 point out in the Olympics, and free throws. How much is a free throw? Half a point?
A free throw is 1 point.
So do you go to the line for one or inside the arc and two?
You're going to the line for one.
Okay.
So the biggest discrepancy in those points, though, is and you might not notice it immediately, but when you make the 3-pointer 2 and the inside the arc 1, that's double the points to shoot outside the arc. So that's a better you know, obviously that's a better situation to shoot threes than in the normal five-on-five model when it's just two versus 3 points. So a lot of teams playing three-on-three focus a lot on the, you know, shooting outside the arc. And that's what the U.S. FIBA team that just recently competed and lost to the eventual champion Serbia, that's the kind of play they have. So lots of threes, lots of just frenetic shots and quick passes. So
yeah,
definitely a different style, and it'll be interesting to see if, you know, the mainstream can adopt that. I'm not totally sure it can quite yet.
Yeah, and you pointed out, like, the game is not made for Rudy Gobert, right? There's no spot
exactly
for him to sit and apply his trade where he's so dominant in the five-on-five game. Who did play for the U.S.? Who is going to play for the U.S. in the Olympics? Who did play in this FIBA, and who's going to be there when we get to the Olympics?
So it was an interesting collection of guys you might not imagine to be representing the U.S. in basketball. The one guy that I wrote a lot of my story about, his name is Dan Mavrady. He's an investment portfolio manager in Beverly Hills. So he's not exactly the uber athlete NBA player that you might expect, but all of the guys that were on the U.S. team have full-time day jobs. They all played college basketball at D1 at pretty good schools, you know, the likes of Northwestern, and Mavrady's played at Princeton, and there's another guy that plays at Brown. They got into the tournament by qualifying as a three-on-three team in another tournament and then winning the U.S. qualifier. So that's generally what the infrastructure is right now. But it was interesting talking to people at USA Basketball and asking them the NBA question, you know, which is what everyone's kind of been wondering about is, you know, will LeBron James or Kevin Durant or any of these guys, even maybe rookies who, you know, aren't ready to play on the five-on-five Olympic team, you know, could young guys play for the three-on-three team? And they're leaving the door open. So whether the qualifying structure would kind of, you know, overlap with the NBA season, so that might limit it, that could happen still. But at this point, you know, you got to wonder, does an NBA player really want to get involved in this? And I think what it's going to require is, you know, the three-on-three game to really start catching on, for there to be actual advertisers and people to put money into it, in which it makes it worth the time of these players. Otherwise, I don't know that maybe there's some guys who think, you know, competing for my country in the Olympics is worth it, but, you know, I don't know. At this point, the future is very much up in the air. USA Basketball isn't even really sure.
You know, the guy.
It'll be an interesting few years before 2020.
Yeah, the guy that I think it would appeal to is like Jordan Clarkson, is Bradley Beal, is,
sure,
you know, the guy who's not going to be good enough to crack the American five on five, but it fits the style, right? I mean, he's not going to be a center, but he's going to fit the style. It's going to be a wing guy who can handle the ball and pass. Those are the guys that I think that look, you're not going to win a gold medal because you're never going to make the five-on-five team. Once it settles in about age 25 or 6, they're like, this is who I am. And I can make $70, $80 million in the league, but I'm never going to make $250 or $300 or $400 million, and I'm never going to be on the Olympic team unless I go do this. Then I think that's who it appeals to. It's not going to be even, I'm trying to think of a star, you know, Eric Bledsoe. I don't even know that it's going to be Eric Bledsoe type of player who's a guy who's playing on a big fat contract. It's going to be that second level contract that knows he's never going to make the NBA or never going to make the American team that would be like, look, I want to win a gold medal and I can do it playing this style. That's who I think it'll appeal to. We'll see if I'm right.
There were some D-League players that were currently competing in the FIBA World Cup. So the talent level has gotten that high. Whether it takes that next leap into, you know, NBA players remains to be seen. But it could happen, definitely.
All right, time for our final four. It is, of course, brought to you by the Kansas Lottery. Be the eighth caller right now. Win $30 in Bass Pro Shop instant tickets. $25,000 is what you can win instantly. Tickets are just $5. See KSLottery.com for details. Ryan, I'll start you with this. These are just four quickies. Tell me the first thing pops into your head. Who's better, the 17 Warriors or the 96 Bulls?
96 Bulls.
Really? How old are you?
I'm 29.
All right. Well, that shocks me. I thought you'd be You'd be.
I grew up on Jordan.
Okay.
I have a deep place in my heart for him.
You're probably the youngest it gets to go with the 96 Bulls. That's interesting. Okay, you're wrong.
That's a really tough question, though. I've struggled with it.
Yeah, well, you're wrong. It's okay to be wrong, but you're wrong. But but that's all right, though. I'm impressed. All right, how much Big Baller brand merchandise do you own?
Zero.
Really?
Not that LeVar Ball hasn't tried to offer me up plenty of Big Baller brand merchandise.
Okay, you're a Michigan grad. How long is Harbaugh the head coach at Michigan?
Ooh, man. Let's say another 5 years.
Five more. Okay. All right. That's aggressive. I like that. And finally, I know I read from your Twitter bio, which is what's your Twitter bio? You tell me what's the easiest way to do it with the spelling on your last name.
It's @Ryan_KARTJE.
Yeah. Did I get it right, Karchi, with my pronunciation?
Yeah, you did.
Okay.
Well done.
Wiltshire at Gonzaga in Kentucky really helped me out on what I thought the pronunciation was going to be. That, and I also cheated and had Rob ask you before we brought you on the air, so that was a big help, too.
That also helped.
It did. It helped a lot. All right, and most importantly, I read on your Twitter bio your passion for the burrito. I'm not going to ask you about burritos, but I will ask you, better choice, chips and guac or chips and queso?
I'm a guac guy.
Yeah.
You know, we are in California, land mm-hmm. of avocados.
Yes,
so
that is right.
Guac.
I like that. I'll take it. I like both. The truly correct answer
is...
Yeah,
you can't go wrong.
That's right. The truly correct answer is yes or both. But no, guac is a fine choice. It is a fine choice. Ryan, great stuff. I really appreciate it. We'll keep following you and watching your writing, and I'm sure we'll have a reason to talk to you again about any shenanigans that go on with the Ball family. So look forward to talking to you on down the road.
Great. Thanks for having me.
All right. You bet. Ryan Karchi from the Orange County Register joining us there in the program. We'll take a break. Talk a little more about this three-on-three. And the NBA awards were given. You know, if you have awards, you have to have an award show. 913-3810-810. Of course, Royals Chiefs Sporting. KU, K-State, Missouri, they're always a topic here in the program. You grab a phone line right now. Open them back up. 913-3810-810. You're in the program.